And welcome to episode 24 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about Dungeons & Dragons. From the early days to the current edition, we'll talk history to gameplay. But first, let's go off topic, starting with some news, announcements, and feedback.
Yeah, so the first thing, most exciting news, we announced our Patreon last week. And before the show even dropped, we had our first patron.
Woo!
Who is patroning us, I think that's a verb, at the friend of the show level, which means Emil Giljam, I think it's Giljam, please correct me if I'm not, will be thanked at the top of every episode. Wow. We have room for four more people at this at the top of the episode. So thank you, Gil. Thank you, Emil.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's so cool.
Yeah, seriously, I was really shocked. We had our first patron so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's such a high level. That's so cool.
And it really does mean a lot to us as well because, you know, we love doing the show. It's not about the money in any way, shape, or form. We have had a few comments of, how does Chris buy so many games?
Yeah.
It's basically all of my disposable income. So anytime I can supplement it, that's great. He does get a few benefits at this level, though. So he gets thanked at the top of every show. He gets to pick at least two show topics a year, but probably more because I might be running out of ideas. I'm really not. I have like the next seven episodes planned out. And he's auto-entered into any of our contests with 25 bonus entries, which is a big deal.
That's a lot.
So... yeah. So, but he's sponsoring us at a $5 per episode level, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So, thank you, Emil.
Thank you so much.
Yep. If you are interested and you want to become a patron, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N for those who are not familiar with it. And read all about us over there. Let's see. I mentioned the contest. This is our last week for the Valentine's Day contest.
Ooh.
Yep. You have until next Sunday. If you haven't entered by the time the Super Bowl starts, you're too late. Speaking of which, we're not going to record Sunday night. We're going to record Monday night because Kitty's throwing a Super Bowl party and I like football. So.
Well, Spencer's throwing a Super Bowl party. I'm pretty much invited.
Fair enough.
By default, I think I'm going to have a separate party where all the girls are going to come hide out in my bedroom and we're going to watch a girly movie.
That works too. But you make such great Super Bowl food.
Mm-hmm.
So... I'm looking forward to it. But if this is the first time you're listening and you don't know about the contest is for a couple couples games. In fact, I believe I put four in the box.
Nice.
Ooh. So Patchwork is definitely in there.
Mm-hmm.
Codex, the, I want to say, core set. It's the one with the neutral factions 1v1. We'll talk a little bit more about Codex in the very... near future, as in today, for our game of the day. And there's a couple other games as well. One Deck Dungeon is in there, which is a new Kickstarter game that I got. I bought two of them, so I played one. I really like it, and I'm like, I'll throw this in. It's unopened.
Why not?
And then there's one other one that it's slipping my mind right now, but it's a surprise. So I said a couple couples games, and now there's at least four games in there that you can play. Like I say, bonus entries, if you leave us an iTunes review, you get five bonus entries. If you share, you get three. If you like, you get one. That's either on Facebook or Twitter. Deadline is February 5th. And this is a secret contest. Only the people that listen to the show know this contest exists. There aren't going to be a lot of these. Maybe one a year where we'll do secret. But this one, we want to reward our actual listeners. So, let's see, a few other things. We have some upcoming interviews. I teased those out a little bit. Hopefully next episode I'll be able to announce one. And then I have two, I think, lined up, so we'll see how that goes. If you're going to be in Fort Wayne, Indiana this coming weekend, that is the weekend of the 3rd, 4th, and 5th, I'll be driving back on Sunday, by the way, for the Super Bowl party.
Great.
Let me know. We'll meet up for lunch or something, because I will be at Winter Fantasy, which is a D&D, mostly D&D, some Pathfinder, a few board games convention there. I've been going every year for the last like 6 or 7 years, so it's really small, but it's really fun.
Nice.
This one, next little bit, is I had a follower following Tabletop Game Talk on Twitter, and I'm looking, I was like, wait a minute, and I clicked around and did a little bit of digging. Not a lot of digging. I just basically clicked on his name. James Kyson is, he's following us on Twitter.
We're so excited.
I know, it's cool. Now, I don't know if he listens to the episode or listens to the show directly. You know, sometimes I get people following me just because of who I follow and who's following me. But James, if you are listening, please email us because we would love to read anything you send us. If you don't know who James Kyson is, he's probably best known as Ando on the show Heroes. Mm-hmm. So he's and he's done a lot of other things too that he's done on TV and such. Mm-hmm. So really cool guy though. So that's exciting.
Super cool.
Very exciting.
So you're famous if famous people know about you, right?
Totally. Yeah, that's how it works.
That's how that
works. We've made
it. Yeah. No, in his defense, maybe he is following 350,000 people. Uh-huh. So, like I say, it's cool if he's listening to the show, and if you are, hi, James. Weight update. I am, as of today, 199.5.
Oh, yeah. The 200 barrier.
Broke the 200 barrier.
That was so awesome, dude.
Yep. Down 3.3 for the week. Down 15.5 since January 1st. So
very cool.
I'm still going. The way I'm doing it, I'll be honest with you, it's apples and coffee grounds, and that's all I eat.
Apples are good.
Yeah.
Apples are really good. Yeah. I need to get on that.
And pudding. Don't forget about your daily bowl.
Sugar-free cook and serve pudding.
I was surprised when you said that was your trick.
So I don't eat just apples and coffee grounds. I do drink a lot of coffee. I'm a little hyped up on coffee right now. My trick, for those that are curious, is I've had one night of drinking this entire month, and that was at my company holiday party. So cutting out alcohol really helps a lot. A lot of fruit and vegetables. It's Weight Watchers, so that's, you know, they kind of push that. And just kind of spacing out the meals and eating a lot of lean proteins and vegetables more than anything else. So, but I do actually, about 3 or 4 times a week, make a box of sugar-free pudding with skim milk. And we'll sit down and eat that as my night routine.
But you said it was like really low in calories. I was surprised. Yeah.
So the whole box of the pudding itself is like 80 calories. And then I think a cup of skim milk is like 80 calories. So the whole thing is like 240 calories for a full box of pudding. It's really not bad. And it gives you that sweet tooth that fills you up.
Yeah, well, I am currently on 179.9, which is exactly what I was last week, which, to be fair, I was worried it was going to be worse than that, because it was a mixed bag this week. Some days I was great, some days I wasn't. Last night I got really drunk, because me and Gloria went to see Ken Bone, the internet sensation that is Ken Bone. He was at a comedy night, and he did like a 7-minute set, and he was really funny, so... that was great, but it didn't help with the weight loss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think, Kitty, you had some fun last night, too.
I did. I had too much fun, which is why we need to get through this.
Yeah.
I got to go to bed. I'm tired. If I sound a little loopy, sorry. We took out Spencer's aunt for a big birthday, and the number will not be mentioned. But, yeah, we had a lot of fun. Yep. I think I stumbled into bed around like 3 a.m.
Yeah, I would say that's about right. That's when I heard you guys come in. Nice. Actually, it came in a bit earlier. You guys were having a lot of fun. I was almost going to come upstairs and join you, but I'm like, I'm already in bed, so I'll just keep surfing the internet. iTunes reviews. Another week with no new iTunes reviews. All right. A challenge to our listeners. One a week. It's not a lot, right?
Right. It's not too bad.
Not too bad. Now,
we're going to have to start incentivizing it more heavily.
Yeah.
Now, more entries in the contest, I don't know.
Yeah, more entries, yeah. So, Josh, do you remember all the steps? I didn't write them down, you can't read it.
No, I don't. Well, I think it's really rude of me to go and review my own thing, so I haven't done it.
Yeah, I never review anything.
And I haven't got iTunes either. Yep. Like, I'm not an Apple person, so, yeah, I'm kind of clueless.
Yep. Actually, if you were a PC person... send me an email and tell me how you rate something on iTunes, because I certainly can. I'm going to ask
download
around.
iTunes. I know you I think can. It actually prompts you to do that if you try and review.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it forces you to download the iTunes thing, and that's a lot to ask of people. Yeah. But if you're a Mac user or an iOS user,
most PC people already have iTunes installed,
Yeah. So it really does help us a lot. It brings us up in the ratings, and when people search for us, you know, we kind of bounce up to the top. So, but in case you need the steps, Kitty, do you know them?
You go to our website And then there should be like a review button. You click there, a review link.
No, I'm going to have to add a review button to the website. I will add it. I do have a Patreon button on the website. If you go to the website, tabletopgametalk.com.
Is it a tab?
It's /review.
Okay.
So if you go tabletopgametalk.com/review, or within the next, well, by the time you hear this episode, you can just go to the homepage and click on iTunes review. It'll bring you to the iTunes webpage. Then you click on open in iTunes. Then you click on review. Then you click on write a review. And then you can actually review us. I missed a step. You actually have to search for us first. You have to search
for our podcast. Yeah.
Because if you're subscribed to us and you click on it from there, there's no way to review it from there. Which is the craziest thing. You can only review a podcast that you search for, not for something that you've already subscribed to, because that would be, why would you do that?
Yeah. Right?
So I do have information that the new version of iOS isn't going to allow apps reviews inside of the app. So it's a lot easier to review them. I'm hoping that that also will be an iTunes thing as well, but we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway,
we've talked way too much about reviews. let's get the feedback.
Finding us through iTunes, Samir C. Biswas,
sounds good.
I'm going
to
guess, posted on Facebook. He said, thanks all, found your podcast through a search of categories of gaming, which brought me to episode 6. Just listened to it this past week and have been binging on the rest since. Really enjoy how conversational you guys keep it.
Thanks, Samir, and welcome. Mm-hmm.
So we've got another one. Sylvia wrote in and said, I agree that Yu-Gi-Oh! Sucks, which is what we all said last episode.
It's true.
And I hate Magic, she says. Pokemon for life. I have a good game for the drawing. I think she means the Valentine's contest.
Yeah.
It's called Rat-a-tat Cat. It's a great and quick game. Ask Josh about it. Also, it was more than 4 years I've been playing Pokemon. Thanks for using my idea. Bye. Awesome. Thanks for writing in, Sylvia. That's so cool.
Thanks, Sylvia. If you're new to the show, back up a couple episodes, we talked about collectible card games. Not well, but we did talk about them. And Sylvia is, well, as far as Josh and I concerned, our niece.
Yeah, exactly. And she's a huge Pokemon fan, but I agree, Yu-Gi-Oh! Does suck. But, you know, some people like Magic.
Yeah, we'll get her into Magic. We'll see.
Pokemon's like a gateway collectible card game.
Yeah, yesterday I was...
Build up to Magic.
Yeah. Yesterday I was DMing again at Cat and Mouse, a game store in Chicago, do an organized play. And Parker, who we also mentioned on the collectible card game, he's like, you got the Pokemon rules wrong. You said that there were 6 Pokemon on the bench and there's only 5.
Oh, dear.
So I trust him. He's very highly ranked.
Oops, sorry. Yeah.
Parker, I apologize. This is part of our correction.
All right. Is this one an email?
Yep.
From...
I'm going to say Mish Botet.
Mish Botet. We'll go with it. Hi, Tabletop Game Talk. I recently learned about your podcast when David
Serlin.
Serlin. Sorry, no, I'm just clearing my throat. That one, I do know that one. Retweeted your comment about liking Codex. So far, I've listened to episodes 18, 19, 22, deck building, meta, and collectible card games, and I'm looking forward to listening to more. In episodes 18, 19, 22, you guys were saying how much you wanted feedback, so here it is. I like the podcast. Most of the time, I stop listening to podcasts when the presenters take more than 3 minutes to get to the topic on hand. It usually frustrates me. I don't mind your opening off-topic segment because, A, you've made a clear segment of the show, so I could always fast-forward to on-topic if I wanted to, and B, your off-topic discussion is fun to listen to anyway. Other podcasts, I find the off-topic parts obnoxious. You three, not obnoxious.
I've never actually heard that before, but okay.
I would love if you talked as much as possible about Codex and any other Serling games. In the future... In more future episodes, please keep it up. I like what you've got going on.
Well, Mish, we are definitely going to do that. In fact, 2 episodes from now is going to be dedicated to Codex completely.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So a little sneak peek. I can tell you that for sure. And listen to that episode. We might have some surprises on there as well. Mm-hmm. Mish's email goes on for quite a ways, and we are going to read that in a later episode, just so we can spread out the feedback a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But for now, we've had someone write in. It's Tony Warp. Hi, guys. Finally caught up on the show. Really enjoying it. Keep up the great work. I'm interested in your next show. I know nothing about D&D, and no one I know plays. But I've always been interested, but too lazy to go out of my way to learn more. As far as games for two go, I don't really play any. Many years ago, I was really into Magic and played for a couple of years, but then gave it up. Still have a couple of boxes of cards and never look at under my bed. I usually play games with 4 to 6 people. Did play a couple of games of backgammon with my roommate not too long ago that was pretty fun. Guess when I hear games for two, I think of the classics. Backgammon, chess, etc. So interested to hear some new and good ones to try out.
Yep. So Tony, we are going to today we're talking about D&D as if you don't know what it is or maybe just know in passing. Yeah. But it is going to be specifically D&D, not generic role-playing, which we did do an episode on, I want to say episode 9, somewhere in that range. I think 17 episodes ago, if I remember correctly. And as far as two-player games, I have a whole stack that I've been looking at. Josh, Katie, and I, anytime the three of us can't get together, I'll be like, okay, well, we can do this two-player game. And so we have a bunch for next week. Let's see.
Episode seven is our role-playing games.
Yep. So that's a good one to start with. If don't stop now. Listen to this one and then go back to episode 7.
All right. On to our quick question. I spaced out when I was looking for that. All right. From Nate. This is paraphrased, apparently. For my group, more rules or pieces equals more nausea. I often need low to zero strategy games, i.e. pandemic is too difficult. Favorites tend to lean towards Scrabble, Dixit, apples to apples, code names, etc. What are more games along these lines?
So this is a good one. I think that one of the reasons mass market games are so popular with groups is because the rules are very, very simple. It's a couple pages and you're there. And that's for the person learning the rules. They can teach the rules by saying, here are the three rules for this game.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the thing. If there's more than three rules, they're probably not going to get it. I don't know. Do you guys have some ideas?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I just recently bought a game that me and Gloria have been playing called Letter Tycoon. Great game, word game. So obviously very easy to pick up. But it has some more strategy to it than Scrabble does, and it's a bit different. But it's very, very easy. So highly recommend that. Loved it.
You need to bring it over because I need to play it.
Yeah, honestly. Yep. I'll bring it around next time. Yeah.
Can you have any?
I know we talk about it a lot, but Insider is a really fun one.
Yep.
Also, since we're on the word game bandwagon here, Bananagrams is one of my favorites. I like it because it's a little more individual.
You know, I have never played Bananagrams.
Really?
I've not played it.
I'm bringing my friend. I've got like 3 sets of Bananagrams.
I know, because I've lived with you for, I don't know, 4 of the past 6 years, and I've never played Bananagrams.
This is my first time even hearing of something called Bananagrams.
Oh, Bananagrams is it's a game that comes in a bag shaped like a banana.
Sweet.
And it's they're just like Scrabble tiles, but there's no number system to them. You just have them. And basically, you make your own little crossword puzzle out of your letters in front of you.
Ooh.
So you get to individually do that. And as soon as you've used all your tiles, you yell a word that I've forgotten. And every person at the table has to grab another tile from the center.
Right.
And then you can discard one tile to pick up 3.
Nice.
There's a couple other rules, but mostly you just sit there and mess around with your letters. And then if you've made all of your letters into words and you yell whatever it is and there's not enough tiles for everyone to get one, that's when the game ends. And everyone else gets to look at your words and make sure that they're a real word.
I would lose that part.
Otherwise, it's a rotten banana. Oh. Yeah, and it gets tossed out, and everyone else plays on.
Right.
Oh, until it's finished. Yeah. It's a fun game.
Yep. A couple others I would recommend, and I've recommended it before, Splendor. It's kind of the perfect game for the casual group. It plays up to 4, and you can teach it in a matter, once it's set up, which is basically taking 3 decks of cards and dealing out, I think, 4, 5 of in each deck in a row. You just basically say, this is how this works. And it's nice and tactile. It has like really heavy poker chips that you use as currency. So it's kind of fun to interact with. A couple other games we have mentioned, Deception, Murder in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Really, mm-hmm. really good. And actually Labyrinth, which is a game we played a couple episodes yeah. mm-hmm. ago. Really easy to get into. And still, even for people who are want a little bit deeper game, I liked it just because of the fantasy aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
there was a really good Onion article that came out this week, too, on this topic where I can't remember. I posted it on the Facebook group. So if you're interested in game-themed Onion articles, you should go like us on Facebook. But I think the title's something like...
Man teaches game by reassuring you it's going to be fun, I promise.
Yeah. Explanation of board game rules peppered with reassurances that it will be fun.
Yep.
It was pretty funny.
If you feel like your group is that, then try some of these games that have mm-hmm. very little rules. Deception, Murder, and Hong Kong, I think, is one of the most undersold games.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
I think
good.
It's a little fiddly.
It's a lot of cards, but it's really easy to teach. Easy. And it people easy love to,
it mostly is. Yeah. I'd say it's on the slightly more complex edge of the ones we've been mentioning.
For setup. Mm-hmm. The person teaching the game should know how to do mm-hmm. all the setup of it, because you're basically dealing out cards and you're calling out the knight role. Be the forensic investigator, I think is what they call it,
mm-hmm.
The very first time so people can get the gist of it. But otherwise, it's a good game.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of games and good games, Spyfall 2 is now out. I don't know if you guys have played Spyfall.
I still haven't.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So the way Spyfall works, and Spyfall 2 as well, is there are 20 locations, and they come in packs of cards. And there's 8 in Spyfall 1, and there's up to 12 in Spyfall 2. But all of the cards except for one have the same image on it. Everybody gets a card. One person has the spy card. Everyone looks at their card and then puts it away. And then they start asking each other questions, saying, hey, Josh, what's the weather like? Mm-hmm. And Josh needs to answer in a way that tells me he knows what the location is,
yeah.
but doesn't tip off the spy to where the location is.
Mm.
And so people keep asking questions to each other.
Mm-hmm.
The spy is trying to, you know, answer questions in a generic way. So if Josh asked me what the weather was, I'd be like, pleasant enough. You know, which is a generic term right. that can
they all
apply
kind of
to
on the fence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you keep going around. It's a timed game. At any given point, if the spy knows where the location is, he can stop the clock and say, I think the location is this. If he's right, he gets a point. If he's wrong, everyone else gets a point. Once the time goes up completely, you start making accusations to see who you can find the spy. If everyone thinks the wrong person's the spy wins, otherwise vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Spyfall 2, 20 new locations. And it plays up to 12 players, where the original, I think, only played to 8. Mm. It also introduces a second spy
Ooh.
Who can win with the non-spies if the other spy gets outed.
Oh, nice.
So it adds another kind of layer in there. Now, you have to have, I think, at least 6 players or 7 players before you get the second spy.
Right.
But so it's something that's cool and interesting, and I like the new locations. I also picked up Ice Cool, which was recommended this weekend. This is a dexterity game. I don't think we've talked about dexterity games a lot, but
a little bit.
Yeah, think Jenga, but this one you're flicking penguins around a school and trying to collect fish while the hull monitor is trying to track you down. So this is another one of those games where light on rules, so you could just pop it down, and it's very fun and easy to look at.
Most dexterity games are,
yep.
but they're also I mean, like, no strategy, usually, very...
Or the strategy is executed by how well you can flick something or stack something or unstack something.
How steady is your hand.
Yep. So a few episodes ago, I mentioned that I got Game Box for Christmas. This is like a Game of the Month club. And I got my first one this week.
Nice.
It's called Ginger Dead House. I just got it yesterday, so I haven't dug a lot into it. But it is a tower defense-like game. So each person has a grid in front of them that they're going to be building up their defense. And then the other players are sending waves. Witches and such.
That sounds like something Spencer would really enjoy.
Yes.
Yeah,
so it looks really fun. Fan, yeah. It has a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor on the box and stuff. So I'm really looking forward to playing that.
Nice.
Maybe we'll make that our game of the week next week.
Mm-hmm.
A few quick pre-orders and Kickstarters. Portal Games is releasing First Martian. They did a print run of 3,000, which has some special pieces in it. As of this moment, which is Sunday, January 29th, there are still some left to pre-order. But if you are interested in the Martian genre, go to portalgames.com and pre-order that. Josh, don't worry, I've already pre-ordered it.
I'm a huge Mars geek. I'm loving
this. Kobold Press, they do a lot of D&D and Pathfinder and basically role-playing books and stuff. They're doing a 5th edition, which is D&D 5th edition setting book from their Midgard setting. So this is all updated for 5th edition D&D. There's about 3 weeks left on that, so if that's something that you like, it's out there. Go out there. This next one I'm really looking forward to. Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. It's a 4X game. Exterminate, expand,
explore, exterminate,
and one more X that means research in some way. But it's made by the same designers of the Tiny Epic line, so Tiny Epic Defenders, Tiny Epic Quest. I really like their games, so really looking forward to this. They say it's a 4X game that plays in 2 hours, but you still get all the 4X feel. So Twilight Imperium is like a 4X game, but it plays in like 8 to 12 hours. Wow. So this is the thing. There's just over 3 weeks left in that. And then finally, Jim the Restless on Twitter pointed me out to Twilight of the Gods, which I was able to back. It's an expandable card game. 450 card decks are included in the base set. So I was able to back that just before it closed. But you might want to check out their website if that looks good to you. If you like card games and dual games or multiplayer card games with your own custom deck, this looks like a cool game. And finally, our game of today.
On to our game of today. Today we played Codex. We played a four-player free-for-all Codex game.
It was crazy.
And I don't know if it was on purpose, that it was like misled to me, but I was not expecting it to take that long.
I didn't know. We'd never played free-for-all before.
Well, and also Sydney had a blue deck that a lot of her cards were slowing down how quickly our units came out and things.
Yeah. So. She put out Jail, so every unit had to sit in jail until another unit came out. She put out Censorship, which I believe that was the building that allowed us to only play one card. We killed that building really quick, though.
There was the you can't play spells that cost two.
Yeah, because like she
for a while
can't she named
the
cost.
And that deck was called the Manipulation deck, and she was loving it. And
she loved it for sure.
And she clearly likes manipulation. Like she's a big fan of social deduction games as well for that reason. But it was just like the perfect deck for her, which was hilarious.
I would have gone crazy playing that deck though.
Well, you liked your deck as well.
I did. I was playing with the white deck, the like adorable ninjas, which was right up my alley. I had a lot of fun with it. When we played previously, I'd played with the red deck, and I did not enjoy that as much.
More direct damage and haste, which is what Josh was playing.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, I love just getting out there and just bombing people straight away. It just feels good.
And I've been playing the purple deck, which is essentially time control, so past, present, and future. I've yet to win with this deck. I'm still trying to figure out what the strategy is.
Well,
to
I think
it.
You would have been in the running this time had we gone on a bit longer. We cut it short a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris let me win.
I played Kingmaker. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to win, but I have an opening to take out Sydney right now, which is bad because I'm supposed to not maybe do that. But I'm like, I'm just going to.
All's fair in love and board games.
Yeah, come on.
We needed to get to recording, so I'm like, all right, I'm not going to win. I'm destroying Sydney's base. Kitty has the most health, so she was going to win. We talked briefly about Codex before. It's essentially, it's a collectible, well, it's not a collectible card game. Mm-hmm. It's a non-collectible card game. All the cards come in the base set or the expansions.
You buy it once, you're done.
And it has, you know, so you can play the head-to-head. Your normal play. But the multiplayer versions of it are really, really cool. So we were choosing between team, 2-on-2, or free-for-all. Team plays where your team plays simultaneous turns, and you have a shared base of 30 health. And there's a few ways, patrollers, you have to get through the patrol line. But the free-for-all has a cool mechanic to it, which makes it much longer. But it felt much more like a board game when we were playing it this way as well. Like, I didn't feel like this was a dual game. I felt like this was, like, setting up a strategy to it. Mm. And the way that it makes it unique is as soon as the first player is eliminated, the person with the most health wins. Mm-hmm. So it's not pick on the weakest. It's pick on the strongest. and protect the weakest. And you can share patrollers to protect weaker players. Yeah,
you have to put yourself into a position where you are the strongest player who can take out the weakest player on that turn at the end to win. Like,
So, and Kitty and Sydney were both learning their decks the first time they were playing the white and the blue decks. Mm-hmm. So the game was taking longer than it probably would had everyone just known their cards.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt like the white deck was pretty easy to pick up. I felt like it only took me maybe a couple turns of like, because I really focused on the one line too, like the
one hero, one kind of card.
I did grab some other spells, but mostly all of my tech came from ninjutsu. That one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the ninjutsu stuff is really cute and fun, and I really loved it.
Yeah, like, you have cute animals, and you have ninjas, and you have raccoons who are cute animal ninjas.
So adorable.
Yeah. The game is really cool, because the purple deck is very sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know, and the red deck is actually very magic red, where you have, like, haste creatures and direct damage.
Yeah,
it kind feels of barbarian-y.
Yeah, definitely. Like, pirates in there, and just, like, lots of kind of medieval themes going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sydney and I have played probably 8 or 9 games over the last week, and we keep playing the same colors. Well, she switched over from red to green, so now she's been playing green for the last couple games, but you just... I keep wanting to try and like try different things, even within a color. We haven't even gotten to multicolor decks yet.
I think you're going to see a lot more of Sydney playing the blue deck now that she figured out there's like tax collectors and was there an accountant? I feel like I there should have been in that deck.
Yeah.
She was really loving both the way it manipulated the rules, but also just the styling of that deck is really, it's like, bureaucratic. Yeah. It's really funny.
She'd be reading cards and she'd just like crack up and like, oh my God, this is amazing. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. And we will talk more about Codex because right now that is my favorite game. but let's get on topic so I can talk about another one of my favorite games.
In this episode, we're talking about Dungeons and Dragons, or D&D as it's commonly known. We'll get a brief history of the editions and then talk about the current edition in details. So, looks like Chris rolled highest in initiative order. It was rigged. So, it's your action.
Yeah, so Dungeons and Dragons, this is probably... I don't play it as much as board games because you have to get a group together. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually the DM... Dungeon Master. So it is a little bit more prep for me, and then you have to get all the people together, and then you're running campaigns, and we'll get into all that in a sec.
I was going to say, you're throwing out a lot of terms here. Yep. You said it was for beginners.
Beginners.
Chris, I'll try to... I will be the, the judge to be like, no, no, no.
Well, yeah.
Define your terms.
And I'm a real newbie. I think I've played once, so this will be good. I'll be able to quiz you a bit on all this.
Yep, you played at Gen Con in an intro adventure for Adventurers League. So, I'm going to give a brief history of D&D, because I think the history of D&D is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It started back when I started, 1974. Dungeons & Dragons came out, Gary Gygax, David Anderson, I think. I might be missing that. Anyway.
I wish you guys could see the look on his face, the blank, like, oh no.
It's, oh my gosh. David, people are going to kill me for a game that's wrong.
And I thought I was an expert on this one. The collectible card game one, I'm like, all right, we're going to mess this one up. Dungeons and Dragons, I'm like, I got this. Anyway, started way back then. TSR is the company at the time. Up in Geneva, Wisconsin. So the Midwest was the birthplace of role-playing games. Not even modern role-playing. It's really just role-playing games.
I hadn't even thought about that fact. I think I just assumed it would be another German spin-off, but that's great.
Nope.
Midwest.
Uh-huh. Cool. Nope, Midwest. It was based off of a game called Chainmail, which was a war game. So you basically had miniatures pushing around the board. And there was wargaming. Miniature gaming was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Gary Gygax wanted to have a little bit more depth to it, a little bit more character. So instead of playing an army, you'd play a single character. Right. And... from that kind of Dungeons and Dragons came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So first edition, hugely successful. By the mid to late 70s, I think it was somewhere to 3 to 5 million people were estimated that were playing this game.
Including my parents.
Including your parents. TSR was like a $30 million company.
Wow.
In the late 70s. Mm-hmm. Like it was huge.
Right.
Then the Christian right got the idea that Dungeons and Dragons encouraged... like satanic thoughts. Yep. demon worship, satanic spells. It was crazy.
You do look a bit demonic. I can understand why they thought if you were the person who was like...
Just because I go around in a hooded cloak does not mean I'm demonic. I mean, the red eyes maybe, but yeah, otherwise...
That crazy look in your
eyes. That was just a ritual gone bad. Yeah. That was bad. There was a movie, Monsters and Mazes, that Tom Hanks was in.
Really?
And this helped perpetuate the stereotype that Dungeons and Dragons was evil. Tom Hanks played someone who went crazy from playing this game, Monsters and Mazes. Or Mazes and Monsters, I think, because Dungeons and Dragons, Mazes and Monsters. And like to the point where he was going to cast a spell and jump off the World Trade Center because it was insane.
Well, there was Stranger Things as well. D&D is heavily in
well,
that. And,
well,
you know,
now, 30 years we'll get later... There, yeah. Right. It's come full circle because now D&D is one of those things that is back in the mainstream. A lot of people are playing it. Since 5th edition came out, I don't think it's been more popular. Yeah. Even when 3rd edition was at its height, 5th edition still is more. Now, 3rd edition, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So 1st edition, there was Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
Then there was Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. Ooh. This, in Dungeons & Dragons, you picked, I want to be a fighter. Well, it's a fighting man. I want to be a dwarf. I want to be an elf. I want to be a thief. But those were the things. Like, you couldn't be an elf thief. That was crazy. Mm-hmm. You're either an elf or you're a thief. So that was Dungeons & Dragons. Advanced Dungeons & Dragons said, hey, why don't we have races and classes and you can combine them? But with really, really weird and crazy rules. Like, you know, elves can't be this and dwarves can only be that. And you can't have more than 3 levels of this if you're that race. So there's a lot of interesting mixes. It's still a very popular game. People play it to this day. Second edition came and they cleaned up a lot of the rules, but first and second edition are practically the same game. Mm-hmm. Second edition just kind of simplified things. The formatting to the books were better in my opinion.
Right.
But you still had a lot of, you know, these weird rules where paladins had to be lawful. They had to follow this. They would lose their powers if they did something that their gods didn't like. Clerics.
So it felt like tweaking edition one was edition two.
Yeah. I like second edition better. Full disclosure, I hated first, second, and third edition.
Despite the fact that you played them for many years,
right? I played them each a little bit.
Right.
Actually, my first experience with Dungeons & Dragons, this is interesting. I think I might have said this on our episode 9.
I've heard this story.
Yeah, so I'm going to say this very quickly.
Episode 7.
I was in middle school. I heard about this thing called Dungeons & Dragons. This was like probably 82, 83-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And I found somebody who played it, one of the nerdier people in school, and I didn't care. I'm like, I want to learn how to play this. I learned this. I rolled up a character as a thief, 4 hit points, went to the basement of my hobby store, walked into the first room. The dungeon master's like, roll detect traps. I didn't get it. He's like, okay, guild team comes down, does 12 points of damage. I'm like, I have 4 hit points. He's like, you're dead. And I sat there for 4 hours and watched other people play.
Oh, no.
I was like, Dungeons & Dragons is the worst. I hate this game so much.
Yeah.
So then I went out and played Champions, which is a superhero game. You don't die in superhero games, so I like that much better.
Sweet.
Second edition came out. I picked up the books and said, eh. Still the same thing, but I like reading systems. We've talked about that before. I really like rule systems. So I bought the Player's Handbook, the Monster Manual, the Dungeon Master Guide, because there's a lot of good stuff in there, even if I didn't like the system.
Were you
D&Ding
by that second edition?
I was not.
No, okay, good.
Third edition came out. I picked up the third edition Player's Handbook, and I'm like, this is more complicated than the Hero System. And Hero System, you need a calculus degree to play.
Oh, wow.
I have no idea what's going on here.
Right.
So third edition became 3.5 almost immediately because 3.0 was broken out of the gate.
Okay.
So within a year, 3.5 was out. 3.5 was eventually, by that point, Wizards of the Coast had bought them. So TSR went out of business after second edition. TSR bought it and started third edition. Third edition started the open gaming license. So you started seeing all of these games based on this new third edition rule set, which was great. It actually was a resurgence for role-playing in the early 90s. So eventually, though, third edition, like, there were so many books and so many choices and so many rules, and it was so hard for new players to get into that Wizard of the Coast says, okay, we're going to create a new edition, fourth edition. At that point, I still wasn't playing Dungeons & Dragons. I wasn't really playing anything. This was during my dry spell of gaming.
Right.
I was in a Borders.
Okay.
Rest in peace, Borders.
Oh, Borders. Yeah.
And I saw 4th edition Player's Handbook for Dungeons & Dragons. I'm like, all right. Because I pick up all of them. Mm. So I picked it up and I looked at it. I'm like, they fixed everything I didn't like about Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, asterisk. 4th edition, probably the hated, most hated edition of Dungeons & Dragons. I was going
to say, you were very alone in that opinion.
Yes. It was a very much love it or hate it game. Yeah.
What do you think were the biggest aspects that you liked about it, despite the fact that everyone hated it?
They balanced everything. Mm-hmm. There were no more random rolls for characters.
Okay.
There were like set point by rules right. for building your characters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All of the classes were essentially completely balanced with each other. They all had the same level system. There were no fiddly spells and stuff. Everything was kind of, there were spells, but mm-hmm. they were part of the class as opposed mm-hmm. to having like a separate spell book. It played very tactically, so it was mm-hmm. a very much a tactical miniatures game
okay.
with mm-hmm. Dungeons & Dragons overlay. And that's what most people hated about it, is where's the story? In the original books, there was no story.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's not like, here's how you role play. It's here's how you play this tactical miniature game.
Right. So it felt more of a tactical miniature game as opposed to playing those roles.
Right.
Yeah, well, but I think the idea is it's a tactical miniature game where you're supposed to insert your own story.
Right.
It's very, right. and that's, I think, why Chris was really drawn to it, is it's very open-ended. You can really make it work in a lot of different situations. Lots of
so it
very
left
kind of
it,
open format right. storytelling. Yep.
So it left it really open for you to fill that story void, whereas people were feeling like, hang on, I need some help here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because the books did not cover it at all. In fact, it even made story interactions mechanical. You had things called skill challenges where right. you had to get X number of successes in order to pass the skill challenge,
mm-hmm.
which turned even the role-playing aspects into just rolling a 20-sided die to see how many times you could succeed before you fail.
Right.
So people didn't like that. Now, when I played it, I didn't use skill challenges. I imposed the role-playing on top of the system, and the system came into play when you were in combat. Mm. So it actually worked out really well mm-hmm. for my style.
Right.
But you had to be experienced, and you had to be okay leaving your beloved 3.5, which many people loved, because there mm-hmm. are so many ways to tweak characters. Mm. It still exists today as a Pathfinder. Pathfinder, a lot of people refer to it as kind of an unofficial 3.75. Mm. When Wizards of the Coast stopped supporting 3.5 and was going to 4, Paizo said, hey, there's a demand for this. Let's make our own version of 3.5. Mm-hmm. We're going to call it Pathfinder because it's the only things that you couldn't use with the open gaming license were the IP.
Right.
So they made their own world. They made their own... essentially, they renamed everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they play tested it for about 3 years before they actually released the first core book mm-hmm. of Pathfinder. So it was heavily play tested by the community. It was like an open play test. And people still to this day play it.
Right.
Now, 4th edition... not well received. I actually have every single 4th edition book.
Wow.
Because they just released a book every month, sometimes twice a month, and I just like, I ate this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually they came out with an Essentials line. Mm-hmm. And the Essentials line confused people even more. Right. Even though it shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
The Essentials line, well, it should have, but it was just in the way they presented it.
Okay.
The Essentials line created a digest version of the book. And what are you laughing at?
Kitty's like dying over here. Me and Chris have no idea.
I told you I'm really tired. No, I just accidentally like punched my mic. Sorry okay. if you heard that sound. Sorry about my giggling bit over here. I'm just going to be quiet for a minute. Sorry.
All right, we'll let Kitty hyperventilate. So the Essentials lines were these digest books.
Right.
But they started introducing the story back into it.
Okay.
And they released 2 new players' handbooks, splitting the classes out into separate books. Okay. But they all had the core rules. But if I wanted ranger, wizard, mm-hmm. Fighter, or whatever, I get this. If I wanted warlock, sorcerer, something, something, I get the other one.
Right.
You really needed both if you wanted access to everything. They simplified the classes quite a bit to make it a lot easier to play, but mm-hmm. people were confused. Like, what is this? Is this a different edition? Is it still compatible? Is this right. new? Is it? It was really just additional books, but because of the format and the marketing, it kind of fell flat.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, all of the future books for 4th edition stopped. Like, all of the announcements went away. And for a year, Wizards of the Coast was basically dark.
Ooh.
And then they come out and they announce 5th edition.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They didn't call it 5th edition. They still don't call it 5th edition, actually.
But everyone else does.
Yes. So it was referred to as D&D Next. Whatever the next edition is, that's what we're working on. And we're going to make this an open playtest. Mm-hmm. And I played the very first open playtest at Winter Fantasy. Mm-hmm. This is probably 5 years ago now. Oh, wow. The convention I'm going to next weekend. I hated everything about it. They went so far back to first edition, and everything I hated about first edition was there.
In your first playtest of
fifth edition.
Which was like the first ever playtest of fifth edition, right?
Yep. I believe I don't remember exactly my DM, but I want to say Jeremy Crawford may have been the DM, which is he's now the rules he oversees all the rules of the edition now.
Right.
The game was still fun because they're amazing DMs, but the system was just so bad.
Okay.
So I signed up for the playtest, and I would continually look at iterations after iterations after iterations. And I was really getting nervous until 5th edition Player's Handbook came out. I picked it up. I read over it, and I'm like...
And immediately bought like 6 copies of it and gifted them for around Christmas.
Right.
And everyone that year in our little group got the book. And it was like we had been playing
Pathfinder
campaign. And he was just like, I'm so excited about this. We're going to end the Pathfinder campaign and we're all making new characters.
Actually, what I said is we can continue with the Pathfinder campaign if you want, or we can make new characters. Here's these books. Your call.
So when did this come out exactly? When did it finally come out and you got excited?
I was living in your spare bedroom, so...
Maybe 3 years then?
Yeah.
I think we're on 2.5... I think we're at 2.5 years because it came out in August.
Okay.
So we might be around 2.5 years.
I didn't realize it was also recent.
Yeah. Fifth edition is relatively new.
Okay.
But it took off by storm. Like, I have not seen a negative review of the system.
Everyone loves it.
Everybody loves it.
Right.
I haven't seen a negative review of it. It's simple. It has all the flavor. It, like, the classes range from something that's easy to, you know, if you want to play a fighter or a barbarian, to complicated things like warlocks and wizards and druids. And you can kind of pick what you want. The books are beautiful. The 3 core books, Player's Handbook, Monster Manual, DM's Guide, only thing you would ever need to play. You know, they're not in this whole splat book. Splat book being something adding additional rules and options.
Right.
There are only 3 published material or like official materials that are add additional rules and options. But the rules are you can use the Player's Handbook and 1 additional source when you're building characters.
Okay.
If you're building a home game, you can say, okay, all 3 of those sources are available. But if you're doing organized play, which we'll talk about in a minute or so, you can only use one of the new sources.
Okay.
So it keeps the barrier to entry very simple and easy to get into. And the system is very, very simple. This is how you play the game.
Yeah. As somebody who, I came in the Pathfinder game.
Yep.
You were running a 4th edition game that Spencer was a part of that, like, is still referred to. Like, that campaign was, like...
2 years of a Dark Sun campaign that went from level 5 to level 30.
Yeah. And Spencer will still talk about his armor from that campaign. Like, that's his, like, yeah. but, so that there was a 4th ed campaign, and then I came in with a Pathfinder campaign. And going from Pathfinder, where I feel like I was trying to make my character for, like, a day and a half, and you and Spencer are, like, looking over my shoulders, being like, no, you've got to do this, and I was just like, ah, and eventually I think... Like, really, Chris made my character for me.
Right.
Well, we had Hero Lab. Everybody got a license to Hero Lab, so we could actually electronically build the characters.
Oh, cool.
It's almost impossible to build a mathematically correct character by hand in Pathfinder.
Oh. Yeah. And even with that, like, I'm getting, like, red error messages and trying to fill in all the boxes. It's like you have to have this to do with this, and like, I don't know, like, I'm pretty computer savvy, and like, this it was hard work, and but eventually I figured it out. I could even level myself by the end.
So that was Pathfinder.
That was Pathfinder.
Yeah. And then when we started our 5th edition game, it was seriously like you start at the beginning of the book and it says like creating your character, and you just like read the pages and they're like, oh yeah, and like you've got one sheet of paper in front of you that you're writing numbers on,
and it's just
much simpler.
I've taught a lot of people how to play 5th edition. Character creation does not take more than 30 minutes start to finish. And I can do that with a group of 6 to 10 people, and we can create characters in 30 minutes.
That's great.
So it is that simple. Yeah. Now, I'll put some cheat sheets down because there's certain numbers you need to pull from things. So I'll have some a little bit of cheat sheets to kind of boil down the pages.
Sure.
But ultimately, that's it.
This is the one where Chris actually managed to get the whole character sheet on a business card.
I do. I have business cards where the entire character sheet is on the business card.
Mm-hmm. Neat little thing. Nice. Yep.
And that works really well for like fighters and...
Barbarians, rogues, rangers.
Not so much for wizards.
It's a little bit trickier to put all your spells on a business card.
Right. The spells don't really fit in there. Not so much.
Need to pick a card.
Yeah.
But yeah, we actually had like the playing card deck of like spell cards.
Yeah, because Gale Force 9 does spell cards, so you can have those next to your character sheet.
And that was fun.
Yep. So this is how you play Dungeons and Dragons. For those who have never played before, one person will sit down and they're preparing the game. And if you're the dungeon master, there's a little bit more involved in this. But from the player side, you don't even have to create your first character. Mm-hmm. You can go to wizards.com/D&D and download. They have pre-generated characters from 1 to 20 for every class. Mm-hmm. So you can like, I want to play a sorcerer. So my campaign starting at first level. So I'm going to download this first level sorcerer sheet. But even if you didn't do that, you would open up your player's handbook. You'd go to sorcerer. You'd say, oh, these are what I get at first level. This is what my hit points are. This is what my stats are. Mm-hmm. You're going to pick a race, and that's going to modify your stats a little bit. And then you're going to just kind of apply your stats. There's a standard array. There's 6 stats, strength, dex, con, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. The standard array is 15, 14, 13, 12, 10, 8. And you just assign them wherever your important ones are based on your class. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you're going to pick equipment and spells, but equipment is recommended. There's actually, when you pick your class, it'll be like, pick equipment from this line, and this line.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no like shopping. You don't need to worry about that. Okay. You just pick your equipment items. You add a background, which gives you a little bit more flavor to your character, adds a couple skills, adds maybe a non-combat ability, and you sit down, you're ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
The rules are this. The dungeon master will say, you're in a particular situation. You're in a tavern, because everyone starts in a tavern. It's cliche, but it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And someone runs in a panic from the outside and says, oh my god, my daughter was kidnapped. I need help because the goblins are taking her away. We're adventurers.
I knew you were
going
to say goblins, too.
First level, it's always goblins.
It's always goblins.
And your adventurer's like, we can do it. We're looking to cut our teeth on some goblins. And then you run out and, you know, and the players basically say, my character asked the guy, what does your daughter look like? How long ago was it? And you'll have a conversation with that particular character. Someone else might be, usually the thief's like, well, everyone's distracted. I'm going to go steal some money from the cash register. All right, roll a stealth check. You know,
the headstrong fighter is just going to run out the door. Let's track him down now. Yeah,
smash the door down. We don't even need door handles.
Or the lawful paladin, as Kitty would play. It's like, we must save her. We must save her now. Get your hand out of the cash register.
There was a lot of that. Like, I was always watching the thief in our group when I was playing the paladin because it drove me crazy.
That's so funny. Just like totally policing him.
I'm an actual lawful good person, I think.
In real life.
I'm certainly lawful. I'm not such a
good guy. You want not only yourself to follow the rules, but everyone else.
Everyone.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
There's rules for a reason.
Exactly.
Unless they're not good rules.
Well, and that's the great thing about this game is when you're in the non-combat area, there's not really any major rules.
Right.
My character does this. The dungeon master says, okay, this is what happens. Sometimes he'll ask for, okay, make a check. This could be a skill check. It could be an ability check. And checks are always rolling your d20 and adding a number to it. So if I say
20-sided die.
On a 20-sided die. Yes. 20-sided die. So if I say, Josh, make a stealth check.
Right.
Josh is going to roll a d20. He's going to look at his stealth skill on his character sheet, and he's going to add that to the number. That result will tell me how good or bad he did. He succeeded at what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a hard target number. Sometimes it's variable. It's really up to the dungeon master to decide to interpret the results.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if Josh's character is good at stealth, he's going to roll higher because he has a bigger bonus to that d20 than others.
Mm-hmm.
You have other dice. You have 4-sided dice, 6-sided, 8-sided, 10-sided, and 12-sided. The only time you ever have to roll those dice are for effects, usually damage.
Mm-hmm.
That's That's the game rules.
Right, right, right.
You know, in combat, it's, you know, you have a certain movement speed. You'll sometimes use figures on the table and you can, you know, you move miniatures around. Otherwise, you can even do it what we call theater of mind, where I describe the situation to you.
Right.
You make it to the goblin hideout. There's two goblins standing outside the door. You guys are far enough away. They don't see you yet. What do you want to do?
Right. Well,
You know.
Right. And then you can really improvise and kind of go on really fun tangents about how you're like, you know what? I'm just going to like try and seduce them. You know, like when you think of D&D, you're like, oh yeah, fighting and things like that. But you could just take it in any
Sydney's
direction you want to.
Sydney's kind of famous in our group for being like the, oh, like we should try to talk to them. Let's understand their motives. And Spencer's like the smash the things.
Kill everyone.
Rob is Diplo. I Diplo that. It's like short for diplomacy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you can do that. And some of the coolest times we've had is like a goblin ambush where they like start talking to the goblins and the goblins are like, I'm confused. Why are you talking to me? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think I agree. That for me, that's the most fun part of these role-playing games and D&D in general, is just that interesting, you know, random story making that you're all adding together. Yep. Like, just, I had the one time that I played, there was like some evil icicle spirit thing, and someone was like, hey, you should totally lick it. And then like someone got their tongue stuck to this weird icicle monster, and everyone was like, snow cones for everyone, while they were like chopping them up. And it was just really random, but like it was such a vivid story that I can remember it.
It is now a memory.
Right,
exactly.
Right, mm-hmm. I can now remember it and tell you guys.
Chris gets really frustrated with us because
that's not true, but I want to hear the story anyway.
We, adopt NPCs.
Yes.
And won't let them like die. So
bring them
into
your
player characters or NPCs. So that's usually people you run into, you know, like, oh, we're going to go save the farmer's daughter.
Right.
Oh, there's two peasants who are going to join us. They have longbows. And usually he assigns somebody to be like in charge of them. And of course we name them. We give them names every time.
So you've got these little pet peasants?
Yeah. Hank and Dean? Hank and Dean were like lizard people from like an underground cavern. We had them tagging along with us for like 8 sessions of this adventure.
Wow. So on the DM side, your role is to present the players with challenges, but you're not, it's not a versus the players.
Right.
Dungeons and Dragons is a cooperative game. As a dungeon master, you want the players to have risks, make decisions that matter, but not put like, okay, your first level character is here's a giant red dragon, sits down and eats you. You don't win as a dungeon master.
Like you had when you were a child.
You don't use a guillotine on a first level thief and kill a kid on his first game.
Right. Well, because the dungeon master can always win if that's the thing. Like you can create a world that's just like a death trap.
Yep.
Right.
But where's the fun in that?
Yep.
Exactly.
So I am what people refer to as an improv DM.
Yeah.
I've prepared games before, but the players never do what you expect.
Right.
So I let them decide what they're going to do and roll with it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It makes it more fun for everyone, really.
Because how can you expect somebody licking the icicle monster?
Right.
Yep.
Right. I'm looking forward to playing one of your games sometime.
I need to do a couple one-offs where I don't have to do a full campaign. I can just do a single session, which are more fun that way.
Yeah.
So Dungeons & Dragons, I do want to talk a little bit about organized play because this is an easy way for anyone to get into. Really, just about any game store with play space probably has a Dungeons & Dragons organized play day. At Cat & Mouse Games, it's usually on Saturdays. We do it at 1 o'clock. This is in Chicago. The Dice Dojo, also in Chicago, I believe they have Monday nights and possibly Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. One of those is Magic. One of those is D&D. And organized play, there are specific rules. In 5th edition, the default is to roll your stats, but the point buy system is a variant that's used in the organized play system. So when you create a character in organized play, everything is you spend your points, you get your thing, everyone starts on the same playing field.
Right.
Literally, I guess. The way you level, how you get magic items, you're playing in adventures that are publishable. You can download them from the DM's Guild.
Mm-hmm.
Your characters will level up. You play in tiers. But because the adventures are encapsulated in a 2 to 4 hour slot, you take your character to a table, you play that adventure, you get some rewards, gold, experience, maybe magic items, and then you can go to any other table that's doing organized play with that same character, and it's still a valid character to play. So you don't need to find a group that can meet every single day or every single week or month or whatever it is. You can go to any organized play session, including conventions. So I highly recommend people who are like, I want to get into D&D, but I don't know where to start. Start with organized play. Search for the Dungeons & Dragons Adventurers League, and you'll get all kinds of information on it. You do not need to know how to play when you go to play these games. First level characters are usually fine. Call ahead of time to the whatever store or wherever, because sometimes I might be running tier 2 or tier 3, which are higher level. But if they know that people are coming to play level 1, they'll have a level 1 table on there. So just get into it. Sit down, play. It's really just kind of sitting around, eating snacks, and having a fun improv story.
Yeah,
and no, you can meet lots of fun people that way.
Yeah. Yep. Honestly, this is why I know Kitty.
Yeah.
Yep. So, Miss Spencer joining one of my D&D campaigns, which met one of my ex-girlfriend, met him at a work party, said, hey, we play D&D.
The
you should come over.
Networking event.
The feminist networking event. And, you know, and some of my best friends I know basically through D&D.
Wow.
So, it's one of those things where you build memories. You know, you played one session and I've heard this snow cone story like a half a dozen times because it's a real memory for you.
It's a good story though.
Yeah.
It's a fun one. Good.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you build real memories with this.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like creating a book or a TV show together is the way I think about it.
And do you think everyone has that same feeling about the kind of role-playing aspect to it? Because I didn't know if there was kind of a split between people who are more into the kind of system and, you know, playing their avatar and rolling the dice versus people who are more into the story. Because I'm definitely more story-driven. Yeah. Like, I don't care too much about the hit points and everything.
Yeah, I find that every table, especially when I do organized play where you don't know who's sitting on the table, organized play tends to be a little bit looser on the story. And it's... The story is there, but the players are mostly there to level up their characters. When you're doing a campaign, we can be a lot heavier on the story.
Right.
But for something like Dungeons & Dragons, you need to have a balance.
Yeah.
You want to have the story, but you need to have combat so that your characters can really shine with their abilities and skills.
I find that there's usually a couple of the different kinds of players at the table who kind of make the balance, because there's usually somebody who's or at least this is my experience in our gaming group, is there's a couple people who are like very focused on the rules, they know what's going on always, and they're like kind of the rule keepers. Like they make sure that no one's cheating too much.
Right.
And then there's like a couple people who like their favorite part of it is the story.
Yeah.
And they really build and they draw the other characters into the conversation. Like but that way it's not, because I'm not a big role player really. Like I don't think I like it takes me a while to
get into the character.
Right, yeah.
So I'd say I'm on the other side from you where I'm more rule focused. I'm like, how can I move best to get my, you know, ability? Yeah. How can I, you know, position myself to block the thing? So I'll be focusing on the strategy, and then Sydney will be up there like, let's make friends and like
come on with me.
Yeah.
And ride into the horde of orcs to distract them.
I'm going to get all of the guards to follow me in a circle around the thing while you guys try to sneak into the middle.
And that's what makes it, like, you can mix those play styles at the table. Mm-hmm. And one important thing, too, 5th edition, all role-playing games are like this, but 5th edition emphasizes this more than anything. It's your game.
Yeah.
If the dungeon master says, you can do this if you roll this die, and someone else at the table says, well, technically that's against the rules, yes, but I'm the dungeon master.
Yeah.
Nice. And right now, this is more fun than following the rules.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And even for organized play, at the beginning, the dungeon master is empowered on every module. The dungeon master is empowered to change the adventure to make it fun.
Right.
Follow the basic storyline. Make sure the characters that need to be introduced are introduced. But make it fun at your table. That is your primary role as the DM. And if you're a DM and you look around and your table's not having fun, they're bored or whatever... do something to shake it up and make it fun. Mm. Let them do things. Say yes more than saying no. Don't say, no, I don't think you should be able to do that somersault over the crate and kick him in the face.
Right.
Absolutely, you can do that somersault and over the crate and kick him in the face. In fact, make an acrobatics check, and if you roll high enough, I'll give you an advantage. We'll get into the game. You'll understand that. On the kick, because that's fun. That's entertaining. That's cinematic. And it doesn't break the game.
Right.
If you're in combat, eventually you're going to win anyway for most things.
Yeah.
So win in a fun and awesome way.
Yeah, yeah. Make it more colorful. Yep. And it sounds like, you know, through the various editions, there was a balance that was either more rules-based. You know, like you said, there was one that was almost like just miniatures and like the story was
fourth
just
edition,
not really given or helped at all and it was too open. And then, you know, fifth edition is like a really nice balance. I'm wondering if... I'm wondering where 5th edition sits in relation to other role-playing games. Like, is it that perfectly balanced of those two things with the rules versus the story? And are there other systems that go more story and more rules out there?
So there's a lot of other systems that'll focus on one or the other. I mentioned Champions, which is the hero system, actually, which is very much very calculated. You literally do fraction multiplications and things when creating characters. You start out with X number of 100 points, and you buy every little attribute. So it's very mechanical in that regard for building characters. And then you have other things where it's like the entire rules are on one piece of paper. So obviously there's not really any mechanics to do that.
Yeah.
Dungeons & Dragons has two advantages to it. One, it is the first. Yeah. It's the most popular.
Yeah.
And two, they run a fine line of staying in the middle.
Yeah.
They want to be... You want the crunchy bits for those people who like... You know, the crunchy bits.
Yeah.
And you want the story bits for, you know, to keep people interested. Yeah. And the best campaigns have a good mix of both of them.
Sounds like a really nice balance, compared to some others. Oh.
So, we're running long. That's one of my favorite topics, so my prerogative.
We should briefly mention, though, the community episode of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
If you want to learn a little bit about Dungeons & Dragons and laugh your butt off, watch the there's two of them. The
I think
first
I'm gonna
one,
have to do that.
The first one is so funny.
So, and I will say there were a lot of technical flaws with that episode, as far as the only die you ever see getting rolled is the 20-sided die, and the DM was the only one who rolled it. Don't worry about that. What they were doing at the table, the role-playing aspects of it, that's Dungeons & Dragons. Uh-huh. Right. The only difference between that and actually is the players would have been making a few more rolls.
Right.
But it is a great example of seeing how that can go.
Nice.
Very good and funny.
I'm going to check that out. That sounds cool.
All right. So I think that is a show. If you guys have an experience for, you know, something that you want to add to Dungeons & Dragons, or maybe tell us about the first time you played Dungeons & Dragons, especially a 5th edition or your first experience within the last couple years, let us know. We would love to hear about it. But until... Let's have Josh take us out.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Facebook @tabletopgametalkpodcast or directly on Twitter @tabletopgametalktlk. So if you like what you hear, help us spread the word by liking or sharing our posts. And now you can support us via Patreon. Get more information at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Until next week, when we talk about couples games and reveal the winner of our contest, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.